Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Gail Seiler, together with my co-host, Kay Puddock. Hello, Kay, and hello to you, the listener.
Hello, Gail, and hello, everyone.
Well, it was a beautiful weekend here in Iowa, but fall is definitely in the air. The maple trees have changed color now and are gorgeous shades of yellow and orange.
Yes, and the days are getting shorter and shorter, and next weekend, November the 2nd, we'll turn our clocks back.
Today on Local Talk, we will have two stories about events that happen in fall. Our first story is about Halloween costumes, in particular about costumes that people wear that are offensive and perpetuate stereotypes about certain racial, ethnic, gender, and other social identities. We'll be talking about efforts, both nationally and globally, to educate people about the negative consequences of these kinds of costume choices.
And the second story will also be about an event that takes place in October in many schools across the United States.
Do you mean Halloween parties?
No, but it does connect with our story in another way, with our first story in another way. We'll be talking about an event that is designed to break down stereotypes and promote communication between people of all ethnic, racial, religious, and other backgrounds. Tomorrow, October the 28th, more than 6,000 schools across the United States will participate in Mix It Up at Lunch Day, which is a wonderful, light-hearted way to address the fact that school lunchrooms can be cliquish in several ways, and they're also apparently one of the most racially and ethnically segregated sites in the United States today. So we'll hear recorded interviews with two separate guests who each talk about Mix It Up at Lunch Day.
So let's get started. Halloween has traditionally been a holiday about things spooky and scary, a day to dress up in a costume for the sake of having fun. But ethnic and racial stereotypes have become increasingly popular Halloween costume themes. And with these costumes, the fun comes at the expense of others. And this trend has been particularly common among young people on college campuses. Talking with us today about this issue is Jocelyn Smith, an undergraduate student at Ohio University. Jocelyn is a member of an organization called STARS, Students Teaching About Racism in Society, an organization which is tackling the issue of offensive costumes head on. Welcome to Local Talk, Jocelyn. Thanks so much for being with us.
Is she there?
Jocelyn,
hello?
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, great to have you with us this morning. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. So I understand that STARS was founded by students on your campus at Ohio University. Can you tell us a bit about why it was started and what the goal of STARS is?
Well, the goal of STARS is to facilitate discussion about diversity and all of the isms, so sexism, classism, heterosexism, ethnocentrism, with an emphasis on racial issues. Our goal is to raise awareness about social justice and, in turn, promote racial harmony.
And in 2013, I believe, STARS began the campaign called We're a Culture, Not a Costume. Can you tell us about that campaign specifically and about the posters that were developed?
Yeah, so STARS started about, or the poster campaign was created about 3 years ago when we started hearing about racially driven themed parties on campuses, mostly by like fraternities and sororities. There were blackface parties, Mexican themed parties, and so STARS decided to do something about it and take the matters into our own hands, because we told the institution about them, but it didn't seem like much was going on. Didn't seem like they were actually doing anything about it. So we created the poster campaign that year.
And could you maybe describe those posters? Since we're on the radio, we can't show them, but could you describe what they look like?
Yeah, definitely. So our first installment was in 2011, And what you'll see is various average everyday people of any sort of color and their stereotypes linked to them right next to them. So you'll see, like, a woman in blackface acting, quote-unquote, ghetto, or an Asian woman holding up a picture of a geisha, hypersexualized. And in the quotations, you'll see, this is not who I am, and this is not okay. We're a culture, not a costume. In other years, you'll see the gypsy, hypersexualized. A lot of costumes are just made fun of and really taking the actual meaning away from it.
I think our other host, Kay, has a question here as well.
Yes. Sure, I was wondering, what is your sense of how this campaign has had an impact on students' costume choices on your campus? Have you had any response from students?
Oh, the first year it came out, we had so much, I don't want to say that we had backlash, but we also had so much support. I think it was something that no one ever really talked about, the fact that our cultures were being made fun of on Halloween. Mm-hmm. And our poster campaign was just geared towards our campus. We didn't expect it to go any further outside of Ohio at all. The night that it went viral, it made national headlines. Hmm. And it really sparked a discussion that sparked something that wasn't being talked about. And I think we were very proud about that.
And so it's been taken up by other universities as well, I know.
Yes. We've had from all the way from University of California to University of Maryland, I think University of Hawaii asked for a couple of posters last week. Like, we're just sending them out everywhere.
Do you also provide any training or education to help students who are concerned about these kinds of costumes to know how to respond?
Yes. Well, in our STARS meetings, we often, every week, we meet and we try to talk about how to confront it in a non-judgmental manner, because I don't think anyone puts on a costume trying to offend. It's
right.
Just about the fact that they are unaware that is offensive. So we do talk about that. We also do diversity training. So we'll go classroom to classroom and just kind of talk about what our campaign is all about to just random students.
And are you doing anything else this year to raise awareness?
I think we are. We definitely are doing. We were considering hosting something called The Talk, which is kind of like, it is like where students are able to come into an environment where they won't be judged for asking certain questions that wouldn't be considered appropriate for an everyday setting. So it's sort of like if you have a question about a culture or something like that, you can come in and you can ask and no one will judge you. So I think it's kind of geared to just creating a safe and non-threatening environment.
Kay, did you have another
question? Yeah, I was just wondering, as you said, people aren't trying to be offensive usually when they are using these stereotypes. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could give us some sense of how people react when they first become aware of this, or how you know how they talk about it, what was going through their minds, and how they get enlightened.
Right.
If that's
right. So a lot of the times when I see a person, I guess in blackface or in any sort of costume, I'll be like, now, why do you attribute these sort of artifacts to our culture or to this culture? And they'll be like, well, so-and-so wears this, and so-and-so wears that. And then I'll basically say, well, I don't wear that, and I don't dress like that, and I don't behave that way, and I don't like to have that stigma, and I don't like people to perceive that of me. Mm-hmm. And they would kind of usually often respond like, well, I don't mean it offensively. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to be funny. It's Halloween. And I'll be like, well, those stigmas are with us for life. After you take off that costume, that's with me for life. That's what people mm-hmm. will automatically assume. until we start telling people otherwise, you know?
Well, that's go ahead.
Does that help?
Yes, I think
so. Does that
help? Yeah.
Yeah. It's really powerful work that you're doing to shed light on this. And I know that the campaign has had a great impact in many places. Last Halloween, I was working at a university in Canada. There was a great deal of discussion of this issue there, and they were using the campaign posters from your campaign in their efforts to raise awareness among students about offensive costumes. So it really is starting to reach farther and farther, I think. We're going to ask you to stay on the line, Jocelyn, while we bring in our next guests to the conversation. Is that okay?
That's totally fine.
Great. In the studio, we are joined by two Iowa State University students from here in Ames, Jasmine Merguia and Itzel Padron. We invited them to talk about the issue of Halloween costumes on the ISU campus in Ames. Good morning, Jasmine and Itzel.
Good morning.
Welcome to KHOI. And you're both undergraduate students at Ohio State, is that right?
Iowa State.
Oh.
Iowa State University. Mixing up my O's.
Yeah.
Undergrads, yes.
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. So tell us about Halloween at ISU. What have you seen in terms of these kinds of costumes?
Yeah, I know last year I saw mostly like the dressing up as a Mexican and that kind of thing, like wearing the big sombreros and the big serapes. And I know I saw a couple ones that were supposedly dressed as quote-unquote Arabs, or some even went as far as saying, oh, I'm dressed as a terrorist, and would wear their representation of what Arab clothing looks like.
I haven't seen much at the parties that I go to because my friend group is very diverse, but I have seen people dress up as samurais. Again, Mexicans, I see that a lot when I go on Welch, but not within the parties that I go to. I haven't seen much.
So, Mexicans, you said it's just a big sombrero and a serape. Okay.
So how widespread do you think these are? You mentioned when you go out on Welch, which is an area where there are a number of bars and kind of in an area called Campus Town. That's where you've seen them mostly?
Yeah, I haven't really seen it out at house parties. But then again, that could just be we're not going to those.
Sure. And so how did you feel about them when you saw them? Or how do you feel about those costumes? Do you agree with Jocelyn in terms of her reaction to them and the reaction of folks in STARS?
Yeah. When I first see them, my first reaction is like, why are they wearing that? Do they know what they're doing? Obviously, they don't know what they're doing. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing it. I know my freshman year, my roommate, she actually did have a sombrero. Before I even knew about any of this, I didn't tell her anything just because I didn't know about culture appropriation and stuff like that. So I kept quiet, but now I know it's like I should have probably told her something. Like, that offends me because I'm Mexican.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think same with me. I see it all the time, but I guess I've never really known how to address it. And that's why when I saw the poster campaign online, I was really happy because it put something that I'd been thinking about and that I didn't know how to put into words. Mm-hmm. And it put it into words for me, and it gave me this visual that I could put on my Tumblr blog, and I could put on my Facebook. And it was just easy to see that poster campaign and see that picture and see we're a culture, not a costume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually saw that Tumblr poster campaign on Tumblr like the summer after that Halloween, my freshman year. So I was like, wow, okay, cool, this is awesome. I'm going to share this with everyone.
So Jocelyn, you see the reaction students here have to your poster campaign.
Yeah, and it makes me so happy because I totally have been in that situation where you just don't know what to say and you don't want to say anything. You don't want to kill the mood, you know, but the poster kind of says it for you.
Yeah, so it seems like the costumes are just really exaggerated stereotypes, assuming that everyone of that ethnicity or that race has those characteristics or behaves in those ways. And they're often either, either sexualized or and supposedly humorous in that way, or they just are trying to be what they consider humorous. But at the expense of, actual people who can't take that costume off. So that's the idea, that the person with privilege who's choosing to wear that costume can take it off, but other people have to endure the stereotypes and the stigmas and some and so on that are always associated with that. Are gender stereotypes common in some of the costumes that you've seen? And Jocelyn, feel free to jump in anywhere here.
Well, I do think that gender stereotypes are represented. I would say more like the sexy Native American, or I guess in the 2013 poster campaign, you'll see the African American girl with, I would say, butt pads and like her own afro, whereas in the 2012, you'll see the African-American male with, like, a gun and a chain and just, I don't know, representation of, like, gang violence.
Oh.
So I think that's how it differs. I also think in the 2012 campaign, you'll see kind of, like, the... They give her kind of, like, a trashy... look, kind of like a cigarette. She looks pregnant and has like a black face, but she's Mexican. And I think that kind of perpetuates the stereotype about women.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was looking online and I noticed, that you could buy costumes that were also very sexualized in that way. And for this show, I also spoke with a graduate student at ISU. And he called my attention to this sexualization even in children's costumes. So I looked online and I saw a children's firefighter costume for sale. And there were two versions, presumably one for a boy. And that costume was a standard firefighter outfit with a coat and hat. But the other version, presumably for a girl, had a short little skirt instead of pants. And the same was true for the costumes they were selling for police officers.
Which a would never wear.
Right. Right. That would be kind of dangerous, I think.
Right.
Yeah. So some people might say, oh, come on, it's Halloween, it's just for fun. Where's your sense of humor? So, Jocelyn, you said a little bit about that, but and it's hard to respond. Just what are your thoughts about how you would respond or how you do respond?
Well, I think part of it is to talk about historical and then current implications, because I see a lot of, like, when people say the sexy Native American, and sometimes it's a couple's dress, and it's a what they would call a sexy Native American and a cowboy. And when you think about what are images of cowboys and Native Americans, it's usually cowboys killing Native Americans. And when you talk about all these different things, well, you also have to think about, well, what is actually going on in today's world? Yes, you can take that costume off of a Mexican or whatever else, but your family's never going to be racially profiled, and you're never going to go through that. So to talk to people in that way and say, look, I know you think it's funny, but there's implications that looking this way has. There's implications with the law, with school, and all these different aspects of your life that you're never going to have to face. And having people understand that, I think, is really helpful.
Yeah, and very important.
Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts on that?
For the gender stereotypes, almost every heritage, almost every culture is made sexy, when in reality it's not sexy. It's like you wear this outfit for respect of your culture. You don't see Mexicans wearing, like, little tiny, I don't know, Mexicans, like, outfits, and then geishas. It just has, like, this whole, again, historical pretext to it, so.
Mm-hmm. And cowboy Indian costumes also, you know, really just kind of deny and normalize sexual violence against especially Native American women, where one in three Native American women has been raped or will be raped in her life. And it just tends to normalize and really deeply ingrain that kind of violence. Another comment that people often make is they may be dressed, say, as a Mexican with the sombrero and everything, and they'll say, well, I don't see any Mexicans around here, so who's going to be offended? But that's something that we need to react to as well.
I guess to that,
It really, because it's a predominantly white institution here at Iowa State, and a lot of people come from rural areas, so they've never even been, like, in a culture or been in a place where it's so diverse. Even though it's not so diverse here at Iowa State, you still see diversity, and people don't realize that some people may not look Mexican, some people may not look this type of way, but in reality, if I were to go to a party and I were to see someone dressed up as a Mexican, they didn't know I was Mexican, which happens a lot, I would... Now, I guess I would tell them, like, hey, what are you doing? Like, could you, like, maybe dress up as something else?
Right. So people will often think, well, if I'm not personally offending mm-hmm. someone, it's okay, forgetting yeah. the fact that you're still perpetuating mm-hmm. these stereotypes and stigma.
Or sometimes
and so on.
They think, because my friend is Mexican, because my friend is black, it's okay. They
it's
won't
okay.
mind.
Yeah.
They won't care. Like, they think it's funny, too. But in reality, it actually hits, like, hard.
I think they also forget right. that they're posting these pictures on social media. Mm-hmm. Like, they're saying, oh, no one at my party is Mexican. No one at my mm-hmm. party is of this culture. But we're still Facebook friends. I still mm-hmm. see you wearing that. You're not hiding yeah. it.
And they might not know. As you point out, there might mm-hmm. be people there of this ethnicity that they're mocking in a mm-hmm. way, and they don't even realize it. You know, something I've wondered a bit about, which is sort of tricky for me, actually, is... the whole idea of cultural appropriation. I mean, just for one example, I've got a necklace that I like very much that I bought actually at a gift store on a reservation, and it's a mm-hmm. it's a Native American kind mm-hmm. of thing, which I like to wear. And I just wondered, is that kind of thing offensive to people? I mean, I'm not Native American, but I wear that because I think it's pretty.
Well, I went to NCORN, National Conference on Race and Ethnicity, this past summer, and there was actually a workshop on cultural appropriation, and it was specifically Native Americans as well. And what I got from it was that they do mind it. Like, if you don't buy it, I guess, the authenticity of it, like, you would have to buy it from an actual Native American, like, the jewelry piece made from them. But they think it's offensive when they find it, let's say, at, like, Yonkers.
Right.
They find that offensive because it's not authentic.
So, because I bought this one at a reservation, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, so, yeah, they would, personally, they would encourage people to buy them from authentic people who mm-hmm. actually, the artisans mm-hmm. who make these jewelry.
Yeah, and actually I've got a squash blossom necklace mm-hmm. too, which I don't often wear because it's very fancy. but that, you know, it's the same. They're very beautiful. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's also going with what you would label as mm-hmm. Native American, because anybody can make any sort yeah. of art and say, oh, this is Navajo, without ever knowing where Navajo people live or what their culture mm-hmm. is actually like and what their art actually looks like. I know Urban Outfitters, Jasmine gave right. a presentation about how Urban Outfitters went through this, and they just kind of made up some art and said, oh, this is Navajo art.
Mm-hmm. So right. that would be kind of, I mean, you can be influenced by an art mm-hmm. style, but that's not pretending that it's authentic. Mm-hmm.
And I do think that the fact that students or people share these on social media increases the, you know, the problematic nature of it. And I also wonder if it hasn't contributed to the increase in themed parties and these kinds of costumes, that it's become kind of trendy, not just to wear them, but to share them.
For those cultural appropriation towards the parties, like Cinco de Mayo is a big one. Almost everybody right. has a Cinco de Mayo party. Well, not people that I know of, but people that I see, like, on, again, Instagram, Facebook. And it's Mexican-themed, obviously. So they wear the sombreros, they have margaritas, they get drunk all day. And that's kind of putting a stigma, again, on Mexicans. Oh, they're just here to get drunk. They're just the life of the party and stuff like that. So that really bothers me when I see people having Cinco de Mayo parties and they're acting, I don't know, I guess, Mexican. And they put Mexican songs on and laugh about it. And it's like, no, that's my culture. Respect it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Jocelyn, has your group been able to gather any data to document the effectiveness of the work that you're doing there?
Not exactly. Mm-hmm. How many schools we've reached or
just changes in attitudes. Like, have you been able to do any, I know it's not your, you know, probably your purpose, but to do surveys about, you know, the racial climate and to see if it's impacted that or anything like that?
We haven't really thought about that, actually, and I'm glad you brought that up because that sounds actually really interesting and beneficial for the next couple of years.
Yeah, yeah, might be something
so
to think about.
That down.
Mm-hmm. So last year, a troubling costume that was seen a lot on social media was Trayvon Martin or...
Right.
George Zimmerman, you'll probably remember that Trayvon Martin was the African-American high school student in Florida who was fatally shot by neighborhood watch volunteer George Zimmerman. So it seems that events in the news fuel this inappropriate and insensitive costume use. And this will probably happen this year as well, unfortunately.
I just recently saw, what was that athlete that was just
released
from the NFL?
Ray Rice, yeah.
Yeah, I've just seen a couple of costumes online emulating that. Girl with a black eye, dressed in black shades. Completely tasteless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and that brings up something that bothers me a lot about costumes, is that they're really glorifying violence. I mean, I don't want to be too prudish about this. I know Halloween is meant to be scary, but some of the costumes you see on, you know, older kids and adults are, well, I don't even want to describe them. I mean, they're really horrible. You know, glorifying violence.
There are YouTube videos, like makeup tutorials, on to, like, make your face bruised, and those tutorials actually came out right after Ray Rice, which I thought was horrible timing. I don't know if it was intentional or not, but when I saw those, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, how are girls, like, actually promoting this violence and putting, like, makeup as if they were bruised?
There was those actually I saw right after Rihanna, and they were called Rihanna makeup tutorials after Chris Brown was actually caught hitting her. So that's the first time I saw that.
Yeah. It surprised me even more that women were actually doing these tutorials. Yeah. Like, are you kidding me? No.
And interestingly, there have been clear responses to these kinds of offensive costumes at some universities. I was looking online to see what was going on with that. For example, the Office of Student Affairs at the University of Minnesota and the Dean of Students at the University of Colorado at Boulder, recently they sent a letter to their student body addressing the offensive nature of these kinds of costumes and bringing it to attention, which I thought was a good step. So looking at ISU, have you seen any efforts made by officials or administration at ISU to address this problem and raise awareness?
I have not.
I know every time it's brought up in a class, it's brought up in, like, my women's studies or diversity classes with like-minded people, but it's never been put out to the student body.
Do you think anything could be done to raise awareness at ISU?
Definitely, yeah.
What kind of things do you think you could do to, or anyone could do to raise awareness and visibility on this issue?
Well, for one, bringing that campaign to campus. I think that is a really hard-hitting campaign, and it's very visual, so you can see, obviously, like, the person of that color and then the costume, and I think that would really hit people.
I believe also, just talking about it, I know the residence halls are big places where people have to meet, and they have their RA, so being able to say, hey, let's talk about this, sit down, ask a group, and have a discussion where people can be open and say, well, I didn't know this, can you teach me? Because a lot of the times people don't know and they don't want to seem dumb. And people are really scared of seeming dumb, so they're like, oh, I'll just delete this picture. But they still need to learn and need to learn why that behavior isn't right.
Yeah, and I kind of called around and dug around to find out if anything was being done at ISU. And I called the residence system, I called the Dean of Students and the Office of Multicultural Student Affairs, and I found a few instances of people, you know, kind of trying to do something on this topic. One was, I found one community advisor for one of the residences who had contacted the Office of Multicultural Student Affairs and asked them to send someone to do a presentation in their residence. But that was just because that particular community advisor was concerned about it and kind of pushed it. And I also found, surprisingly, when I called the Office of Greek Affairs, which oversees sororities and fraternities, the sororities and fraternities do a trick-or-treating for young children who come to the frat and sorority houses. And they have some guidelines for that. And the fraternity and sorority members dress up for that when the children and families come. But they were told that the policy was that their costumes cannot be offensive to children, families, or cultures. So that's for the daytime activities when children come, not really referring to parties they may have at other times, but at least it's something that they're aware of and, you know, kind of getting some work done on that. Hi, Jocelyn. We lost you for a minute.
And Hi.
And now we have you back, so thanks. So we have a couple minutes left, so I thought maybe we could talk more about, Jocelyn, from your experience of how you got this started, maybe you could give some advice to the students from ISU, not to put it all on their shoulders, but any tips on what they might do there to get the university to begin to address this maybe in, or the student body to address this in some kind of organized fashion.
What I've noticed is that the administration acts after the students demand something. So I really, if you are involved with any sort of student activism, any sort of organization similar to SAIS, I would get a hold of them and host some open dialogue. You don't need to create a poster campaign, but maybe a sort of setting where people can talk about this sort of issue, cultural appropriation, and insensitive costumes. Spreading awareness in any sort of way you can, talking to people about it.
Yeah, those are good tips, and it might be a good time to do that now, after Halloween even, when people are aware of it, and then kind of moving forward toward other events and so on, and then to be ready for next year, perhaps.
I have one question for Jocelyn. What do you do in an instance where a person of, let's say, like the samurai one, what if that person dressing up as a samurai, what if that person dressing up as a Mexican is actually of that race? Like, is that in their terms now, or?
I often see that because I will see certain people dress up as certain cartoon characters.
Mm-hmm.
I do the same thing. Because they still don't, they are their own person, and I still don't like the fact that they are representing the whole culture. So yes, it is completely different. Or what do you do if you see somebody of not a privilege dressing up in a costume of a different culture? I think you should address it the same way you would as of a person with privilege.
Yeah, because they're still perpetuating the stereotypes and marginalizing the people who are of that ethnicity and don't have the privilege to take that costume off. Or.
Yeah, I was just going to say thank you because I had the exact same question because I do see that and I never really knew how to address that. So, yeah, thank you for clarifying.
Well, we're just about out of time, and this has certainly been an eye-opening discussion. It gives us some serious things to think about as we get ready for the fun holiday of Halloween. It highlights the fact that people really need to ask themselves how their costumes connect to the larger issues of prejudice and inequality. So if you're out there and you're planning a costume for Halloween, be sure to take the responsibility for the messages that the costume is sending and encourage your friends to do the same. I think that's something we all can do. Thank you both for coming in, our ISU students, and thank you for being on the line, Jocelyn from Ohio University. It's been a great conversation.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Local Talk on KHOI. I'm Kay Potter, together with my co-host, Gail Seeler. We've been talking with Jocelyn Smith from Ohio University and Jasmine Margula, did I say?
Mergia.
Mergia. And Itzel Padron Zuniga.
Yep.
From ISU. Thank you both.
Yeah.
That was Bob Marley, of course, and the song was called Stir It Up, which is the theme of our next section. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am Gail Seiler here with Kay Puttick.
We're focusing today on educating young people to reduce prejudice, break down stereotypes, and promote conversations around difference.
In the first part of the show today, we were talking about efforts to educate young people to choose Halloween costumes that are not offensive and that represent all ethnicities, races, and genders in positive, non-stereotypical ways.
And along similar lines, we'll move on next to talk about an important event that takes place tomorrow, Tuesday, October the 28th, at schools all over the country. But it doesn't happen yet in Ames, Iowa. It's a national Mix It Up at Lunch Day, or it's sometimes just called Mix It Up Day, because the mixing up activities are not necessarily confined to lunchtime. Mix It Up Day is an initiative pioneered by an organization called Teaching Tolerance, which has an award-winning website, tolerance.org, and which provides print, online, and video resources for both parents and professional educators to help them educate young people about cultural diversity and tolerance. They produce a magazine called Teaching Tolerance, which is provided free to any school that requests it, and they also produce award-winning documentary films about cultural diversity, civil rights, and similar topics. I should add that Teaching Tolerance comes under the umbrella of a bigger organization, the Southern Poverty Law Center, or SPLC, which was founded in Montgomery, Alabama in the early 70s by Julian Bond and a group of civil rights lawyers. The SPLC provides information about militias and hate groups to the FBI and to law enforcement, and the SPLC lawyers have won landmark cases for the victims of hate crimes. The SPLC has a three-pronged purpose: to identify and fight hate, to fight injustice, and to teach tolerance. And of course, Mix It Up at Lunch Day comes under the heading of Teaching Tolerance. I talked about Mix It Up at Lunch Day by telephone with Manita Bell, who's the Mix It Up coordinator at the SPLC in Montgomery. Monita is also a writer and editor for Teaching Tolerance, the Teaching Tolerance website and magazine. So let's hear part of that recorded conversation. Thank you so much for talking to us today about Mix It Up at Lunch Day. How many years has this been going on?
This is the 13th annual event. The first year was 2002.
Yeah, and I understand about 6,000 schools take part in this.
Yes, last year over 6,000 schools registered. Mm-hmm. We encourage schools that are participating to register. Not all of them do. That's the best way that we can keep track. But
right.
We know that many more schools are participating than those
than the
that
registered
are registered.
Ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you like to describe what goes on? I know it's varied things that go on, but would you like to describe what happens on Mix It Up at Lunch Day and the sort
oh,
of
sure.
thinking behind it and so on?
Absolutely. Well, we Mix It Up at Lunch Day was inspired by the fact that through communication with schools, and you might even say some of the headlines, we found that the cafeteria really is probably the most segregated space
mm-hmm.
in a school.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it, as we know, students do, especially once you get into the middle grades, start gathering into their cliques or becoming more aware of differences, wanting to just stick with those people who they feel are more like them. It was a growing problem, and we know that as a result, a lot of students end up feeling excluded and left out.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't fit in with some of these more established groups,
mm-hmm.
then where are they left? And not only the exclusion, but also a lot of bullying that results from various identity differences that can just make school a very unsafe, unwelcoming place
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
for a lot of students. So the idea behind Mix It Up is to break down all those barriers, which really, in the end, don't mean much. I mean, we appreciate differences. Everyone has differences, but they shouldn't keep us from connecting with each other. So Mix It Up is designed to shut all of that down and get students to realize how much they actually do have in common by talking with someone they don't normally talk to. And so what happens, and schools do this in various ways, actually mix up their students in various ways. But the goal is to ensure that students don't sit with the same people they sit with every day. So some choose to do that by handing out different color stickers or pieces of paper as students enter the cafeteria, and then they sit at tables that correspond with those colors.
Yeah, so it's completely random.
Right, something completely random, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or it might be by birth month or the first letter of your name or, you know, just some kind of way to get students mixed up. And while they're at their tables, they can engage in a number of activities. A very common one is to have discussion prompts at the table. And they might be, you know, something fun and silly like, would you eat a live worm for $1,000? You know, so kids get to talk about why they would or would not do that. And, you know.
So it's sort of lighthearted.
Yes, yes, lighthearted. And that's the thing. Mix It Up tackles some very serious problems regarding exclusion and bullying and lack of empathy, but it's a fun approach to that. It's fun, it's lighthearted, and schools get so creative about how they actually engage in this day. They involve music and DJs and candy and parades and flash mobs. And
what's a flash mob?
Oh, a flash mob is when, kind of ahead of time of an event, students have or people have gathered together to learn a dance, basically. And so it starts all of a sudden in a public place where passersby might be unaware. So it might start with one person or a couple of people, and then slowly but surely, increasingly, more members of the audience join in and participate until you get to a point where there's this large group of people all doing the same dance. It's choreographed, and it's a really cool bonding activity.
Oh, yeah, that does sound like fun. Now,
we've had a school-wide flash mob.
Do they do this, like, before they eat or after, or how does it fit in?
Well, that's the thing about Mix It Up. We call it Mix It Up at lunch day, again, because of the segregation that's so apparent in cafeterias. But a lot of schools don't just do it at lunch. Some schools mix it up all day. They have pep rallies. Some schools, after they have lunch, they continue the fun outside at recess or in some other kind of outdoor activity involving team-building games and all kinds of things. So schools, they find ways to make it their own. So we kind of laid the foundation. We offer free activities and ideas on our website as well as all kinds of other materials like posters and stickers and flyers. But schools find ways to completely make it their own and cater to their unique populations.
Yes, and I believe on your website you've got a blog that schools talk about the things they did and so on. So people
Yes. Every year around Mix It Up time, we try to, you know, we keep track of the stories that come through local news or that participating schools actually send to us. Mm-hmm. And we will put them into blogs and kind of, you know, just as a roundup to let folks know what these schools are doing all around the country. And, you know, it's a very unifying thing.
Sure.
So while schools are doing this in very different ways, and sometimes on different days, everybody doesn't necessarily do it on the national date that we selected.
And what day is it this year?
This year it's this Tuesday, October 28th.
Okay.
But we already have schools that have told us, you know, we're not doing it on Tuesday, but we're doing it the next day, or we're doing it the next week. Mm-hmm. We have schools that mix it up every week or every month. Some schools mix it up several times a year. So, you know, a lot of schools don't just wait for that one day a year to change their school climate, essentially.
Yes, you have what you call model schools. These are schools that have Mix It Up, and they do other things too, I believe.
Absolutely.
They have several, like, Mix It Ups during the year, presumably.
They do, yes. We open these applications to all of our participating schools, usually early in the year. So around January is when we open the application. And we require them to not only have participated in Mix It Up at Lunch Day whenever they did it, but to have engaged in other activities in the spirit of Mix It Up.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, that spirit being to encourage inclusion and an appreciation for differences. So some schools, they do Mix It Up, and they also participate in GLSEN's National Day of Silence or No Name Calling Week or Red Ribbon Week, or they have their own special weeks or days.
What's Red Ribbon Week?
Red Ribbon Week, I believe. Please don't quote me on this. I think that has to do with anti-drug.
Oh, okay.
Programming, right? But they'll have their own programs surrounding bullying. For instance, October is National Bullying Prevention Month, And that's part of the reason we have selected October as the month that we do mix it up to coincide with Bullying Prevention Month. So schools engage in activities for bullying prevention alongside Mix It Up, or they engage in other community activities that are designed to get folks to connect and appreciate differences and encourage multiculturalism and pluralism. So they find a number of ways to keep the spirit of Mix going all year beyond Mix It Up at Lunch Day.
Now, if people are interested in starting something like this at their school, what's the best way to do it? How do you find most people get these mix-it-ups organized? I know they sort of work, they prepare the ground before the day.
Right, yes. Many of them do prepare the ground before the day. Some of them, in their advisory periods or homeroom periods, engage in activities that are designed to either get students thinking about some of the divisions in their schools or in our society at large. And so they engage in those discussions. Some schools actually also have their students practice meeting someone new.
Mm-hmm.
So practice starting a conversation with someone you've never spoken with before, so that when they get to Mix It Up at Lunch Day, they're a little less nervous about
right.
it. They've had some practice runs, and they are, you know, a little bit more confident about plunging into a new conversation. Some schools use some of their student groups, whether it's student council, SGA, some other student-led group, to get creative in their own ways and encouraging their peers to
mm-hmm.
begin thinking about mixing it up. You know, why it's important to get to know people who are different from you, or, you know, why our society is enriched by the idea of
right.
diversity, but not
mm-hmm.
just the idea, but the fact that we do have a diverse society, and why it pays to appreciate that and to start thinking about that as a young student getting ready to go out into the world once you graduate. So we found that some of the best events, some of the richest events, really are spearheaded by students. So if schools want to get started, they really want to have a clear sense of who are the different people I can get, who are the different people that represent different groups in the school that I can get to be my core planning team. So you want we encourage, and this is another criteria to be a model school, it's not just teachers planning it, or
right.
it's not just administrators planning it, but you actually have mixed up your group of planners to plan this event. So it's teachers, it's students, it's cafeteria workers, administrators. There's a broad range of people, you know, coming together to produce this event that is supposed to benefit the entire school community, not just the students, not just the teachers, but everybody in the school community.
Oh, that's terrific, yes. So it seems there's a lot of reasons for that, because if the students themselves are involved, they'll buy into it more, I presume, than rather than
yes.
feeling it's something that's imposed on them. But also,
absolutely.
I'm trying to think of ways to make this appeal to, quite honestly, teachers who are very overworked.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, lunchtime might be the one time that they... But I suppose that's part of the answer. It shouldn't be them doing it. It should be the students doing it.
Right. It should definitely be a collective effort. I shouldn't say it should just be on the students, but no one should be mixing it up alone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it really should be a team effort. And you mentioned teachers being overworked, and they absolutely are. And that's why, you know, and what we do here, we support teachers absolutely 100%. That's why we're here and why we do what we do. But Mix It Up, I mentioned these flash mobs and parades and all these really elaborate things that schools do, which are fantastic. But sometimes it's hard to make that happen on a particular campus. And so I definitely want to encourage people that it doesn't have to be elaborate. It doesn't have to be some big, huge thing. As long as students are actually mixing up who they sit with, they're meeting new people and having new experiences, that's all we want, really.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's all we want. So if that's just as simple as everybody wearing the color blue, sit at this table. Everybody who was born in May, sit at this table and have a conversation. That's all it takes. It doesn't have to be some huge, grandiose effort.
And they can maybe start small and get more grandiose
exactly.
as the years go by.
Keep it simple. And, you know, the more experience you get, the more time you get, then you can kind of branch out. But just keep it simple. And just the primary goal is to get students having those new conversations.
Well, thank you. That was Monita Bell, the National Coordinator for Mix It Up at Lunch Day, talking with me from Montgomery, Alabama. Although we didn't have time to include it today, Manita also spoke to me about the brand new K-12 literacy-based curriculum from Teaching Tolerance. It's called Perspectives on a Diverse America, and you can learn about it on the website perspectives.tolerance.org. Now let's hear a bit more about Mix It Up from an Ames resident, Katie Swalwell, who's a new assistant professor at the School of Education at Iowa State. Katie is very interested in ways to teach social justice, and she has published two articles in Teaching Tolerance magazine about her research. But in this brief extract from our conversation, Katie is addressing the fact that kids might naturally want to sit with their friends at lunchtime.
I think it's important to note that not all of those patterns are nefarious. You know,
right,
a lot of times for kids, the lunchroom and that social time is time for them to connect with their friends, to feel safe. You know, it's a place they feel welcomed and supported, and they might not feel that at other times of the school day. So it is important to recognize that not all of these patterns are terrible. But the idea that we should recognize and not be afraid to cross social boundaries and interact with people that we don't normally interact with in respectful and pleasant, civil ways, that lesson is super important, regardless of what category we're talking about. And it gets kids out of their comfort zone, and that's a skill that we really want to develop in children as well, to push themselves a little bit, to take those kinds of risks. I grew up in West Des Moines, actually, and went to Valley High School, and we had a class there called Peer Helpers that was really popular among the students that you took your junior, senior year. I'm not sure if they still do it, but our teacher, Mrs. Duffy, who was one of everyone's favorite teachers, she had a policy where all the members of the class who were sort of purposefully scheduled to break up some of those social cliques, you would go to lunch or coffee or go for a walk. You had to have some one-on-one time with every single person in the class. And that was really fantastic. I have a lot of great memories from that. And I think that exercise really helped shape who I am as an adult, thinking about when I look at the world or I look at a room full of people, who I think might be a potential friend or might be someone that I might go up and talk to or connect with, that I have a much wider range of what I think might work. It's pretty darn wide. Whereas before, I think you tend to look for people who are like you in some way to feel safe around. So experiences like that where you're asking students to cross those social boundaries in whatever way they take shape at your school are just so important. It's a great life skill to develop.
Well, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us.
Oh,
maybe,
you're welcome.
Maybe you can come again.
Oh, it'd be my pleasure. This was great.
Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for raising awareness about the day. I think it's really important, and I hope some schools and Ames try it out.
I certainly hope so, too. Thank you. That's it for Local Talk. We've been your hosts for today, Kay Patrick and Gail Seeler.
Today, we spoke with Jocelyn Smith from Ohio University and Jasmine Merguia and Itzel Padron Zuniga from ISU. And in our second segment, we spoke with Monita Bell, the national coordinator of Mix It Up at Lunch Day, from her office in Montgomery, Alabama. We also spoke with Assistant Professor Katie Swalwell of the School of Education at ISU.
Local Talk was engineered by Rick Morrison. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard today was Stir It Up by Bob Marley. Local Talk is a production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. You can listen to this show and all our past shows online at the website khoifm.org. You can find today's show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it. Thank you, Ron. KHOI is now streaming live online at khoifm.org, where you can also find archives of KHOI's shows. Please remember that you, as listener, are the most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as an audience and your generous donations help make it all possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.